Wow, that's a way to start a service. Woo, I feel kind of holy. How about you? Yeah, that's why we keep calling you. We want you back here doing that so that we can feel it. And that really is what I aim to speak about today. And I love how everything came together in the reading and the prayer and the announcements and then the music. And God is good. So good morning. Welcome to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Karen Rice, and I am the spiritual leader of this community. And what an honor it is, especially with the last few weeks, to know that we stand in a spiritual teaching, a philosophy about the great, magnificent presence of God everywhere at all times, and to feel the security of that, to know that people's lives are recovering. I heard this morning that they're finally letting residents back down into the Keys so they can return and see what work they need to do. And Clyde's sister continues to rebuild her life. Her and her family are working for that. And so there's just this exquisite opportunity for us to celebrate all the good things that are unfolding in life. And that's what we're going to do today. And I have written a message. I've prepared a message that I want to deliver today that has an odd name. I was a little disappointed when I looked at it and went, really? That's what you named this talk? The title of the message is Emotional in Origin. And what I'm really going to be speaking about that I don't do very often is to talk about health, to talk about spiritual principle in the way that we teach it and how that it relates to our health and our sort of physical, mental, emotional, our overall well-being. So I think we're going to have a good time looking at this practical application just in the same way we do every Sunday. But the one thing I wanted to do was this morning is to put a little disclaimer at the top of the message. And that is to say that no matter what I say, no matter what words come out of my mouth this morning, I am really insisting that you work hard to not personalize it in such a way that you think you're not doing good enough, or that I'm suggesting you have to live a healthier life and make better choices, because I am in no way reprimanding you. And in fact, the point of my message is quite the opposite of that. Today, I want us to leave here rejoicing in how amazing it is that Spirit always works for us, that the whole divine life is designed for us to have a positive experience in our living, and health is no exception. So no matter where you are in relationship to your own journey of life, and if you have had health issues, we are looking today, like always, for that gem that feeds you and helps you remain open to greater possibilities, because I think there are some pretty important things that could be communicated today, or could even send you on your own personal search to stumble onto something that's going to be invigorating for you in your own personal use of spiritual principle. So that stated, I would say that last week we looked at the idea of the God-like nature. What is that? What is the nature of God? And we dove pretty deep into sort of dissecting that and looking for a way to make it relatable. And today we are going to take that information, but we're going to personalize it a little bit more, because this morning I want us to turn our attention to those God-like qualities, the divine qualities that define the God-like nature in us. Because see, we cannot be separated from it. It's just a part of who and what we are as creation, as a part of creation, being here today because God loved us so much, we have been kissed into being. So It takes us to the very beginning, and I say this every opportunity I get. We have to begin by looking at the way we describe what God is. And the specific approach I'm going to take is for us to look at the idea of God, since we're relating it to health and physical well-being. I want us to look at God as an energy that is everywhere present. And I want you to think for a moment with me about those God-like qualities, the characteristics of the divine that we talk about all the time. We can rattle them off. So we know that as we think of God as an energy, and we know, for instance, that God is love, notice that it's not difficult for us to imagine what that energy of love feels like when we're experiencing it, when we're loving, or when we're allowing ourselves to be lovable or loved. So it creates a dynamic. So that movement of what we could recognize as love is divine love in us. It is the God-like nature in us, activated as we pay attention to it. Think also of the perfect order in the universe, the way there's harmony and unity, the way all things fit together, that there's a very specific energy to the movement of life that assures order. And I would say that every time we clean our house or take our car out to get cleaned, we're participating, we're being active in creating more order and beauty in our lives. And then as I began to think about joy, I thought, you know, the word tickle came to my mind. So, you know, if you think of being happy and having joy, there's some kind of inner divine tickling, I think, that occurs. We can relate to what joy feels like. When we're happy, we know how that feels. We especially think about it when we're not happy. And so today I want to put that all together and show how even the seeming absence of it is still a way to use spiritual practice to restore it. So in the most basic way, I am speaking today, and I'm inviting you to notice that if I ask you to feel peace, what does peace feel like inside of you? You'll notice that it creates a different energetic vibration than if I asked you to imagine power. What does power feel like to you? There's difference. So all of these gorgeous qualities are really quite varied, and together they encompass the whole of what God is. If I think of how I feel when I experience beauty, I can honestly say that I can feel beauty, the experience of beauty, and it feels different to me than when I'm feeling compassionate. So these are this is our beginning place to recognize that all of this is God actively expressing in us. And when we begin to wrap our mind around that, to comprehend that in a deeper way, wow, now we're beginning to understand what oneness is and the ways in which we cannot be separated from God. So we, humanity, we are energy in motion, so it is natural that we as humans emote, and that means that we are emotional in origin, and that's what the title of the talk means. Isn't that good? I know, I made that up. I thought it was really good too. It's hard when you're sitting alone in your office writing, you know, but for me that really speaks it well. So what happens when I make a statement like that, perhaps for some of you, your mind immediately goes, yeah, but what about all those emotions we have that don't seem very godlike? And I think it's valuable for us to look at that. You know, let's really examine that. And in religious science, in this teaching of science of mind and new thought, we have this gorgeous way we talk about polarities rather than dualities. And it makes so much sense. So if I had a broomstick that was, I cut a broomstick, so I've just got the long broomstick, not the broom. And I said to you, this broomstick represents joy. Let's just use that as a symbol of understanding how joy works. We are given the God-like quality of joy, and it is always ours, and it is never not in our life. But sometimes the joy on this end, which is a strong vibration of happiness and very recognizable loveliness, it feels real different than the polar opposite of joy, which we might say is sadness. Now, it's important for us to know that sadness is not bad or wrong, and you haven't done anything horrible, and sadness is not necessarily depression. It is a normal human experience. But what sadness is, if we look at the broomstick, is it's just the absence of all the joy that's at this end. But it is still all a part of that broomstick that I'm calling joy. And if you think about, I'm doing good, right, Reverend Cheryl? I know, there were days years ago where I sat down to her and I went, would you just explain polarity to me? It is so hard to understand polarity. I have done good, right? I have grown. So the polarity, if you think of that broomstick now as like a part of your DNA, like something that's just divinely, that divine DNA I'm talking, that's divinely in you, it is never not there. So no matter what we go through and we're not feeling that joy can be restored. In fact, that joy desires to be restored. And we could have the same conversation around any of those divine attributes. So when I look at it this way, I begin to see that the way that we grow is when we're having what we think is an experience of the absence of something we want, and that then points us directly to the direction we want to focus to attract or move toward that which we do desire. So the contrast is very useful in understanding our spiritual movement through life. But what we eventually come to understand as we stay in the study is that the body and the mind are inextricably intermeshed. You cannot unweave them. The body and the mind in our experience of walking through our human life is absolutely woven together. So on one hand, there is no point where the body stops and the mind starts. Think about that. There's no point where your body stops and your mind starts. It's part of the human experience of living in form. And more important than that, what we understand now, it's beautiful because the metaphysicians have been writing about this for a long, long time before we had science to back it up, but our thoughts create our feelings, and our feelings create our emotions, and the way we emote as we're moving through our day determines what kind of conditions we experience in our living. And so there's some, I always feel a little, at this point I get this sort of self-responsibility trigger that goes off in my own experience. But what I know then is that every thought I have puts something in motion. Every thought I have is an activity that life responds to. And it will impact my physical conditions. It demonstrates in my life in one way or another, but that I am participating based on what I'm thinking. So, and not only that, but what I am thinking is also influencing or impacting my physical body in terms of health and well-being. So it's a very personal, very intimate relationship. So what we know is the body has a physical response to the state of mind. Our bodies have a physical response to the state of our mind, the thoughts we're thinking, what we believe, the attitude we walk around in life with, and all of that thrown all together. In the movement we are calling neuroscience, There's a high interest in it. I already have an entire bookshelf with books, and I have a bunch on my wish list, a bunch more, because new information is constantly being delivered to us from all the recent research they're doing. And so books are being published, new research is popping out every time you turn around, and there is so much evidence that a key factor in our well-being is connected to a spiritual practice. And aren't we blessed that we belong to a faith that has an emphasis on the body-mind connection, that we really get the organic nature of that connection? So in religious science, if somebody says to you, it's all in your mind, well, we're never offended. Because we get it. It's scientific. We know that happy thoughts make happy molecules. We understand that our lives change as we change our thinking. We advertise and promote on our wall this scripture from Romans that says, man, we're transformed every time we renew our mind. Every time I choose to put something fresh and new in my mind, my life is transformed a little bit more. And we live by these rules. And so, yet, we have all this information, and we spin around in our worlds, the privacy of our very own heads. We aren't always spinning in a direction that augments us in a healthy way, right? We get impacted by the stuff going on in the world, or the whatever we worry about, or the shenanigans our families are getting into, and all of that. So, what I wanted to say to you is, it's okay. Don't worry about all that because you have superpowers. You have superpowers. And what I want you to know, and you need to take this home with you, if you didn't pick it up on your way in, be sure you pick it up before you leave today. There's an invisible cape for you. And you should carry your invisible cape and its superpowers everywhere you go so you can enhance your experiences. So in other words, I'm at the grocery store and somebody seems to have been really rude to me. Well, you know what I can do? I can get out my super cape and shake it out and put it around me. And suddenly, with my new superpowers, I can see that person wasn't doing anything to me. That person is probably having a tough day. And I have a whole different vision when I use my superpowers. Or let's say that it seems like I just weeded the front yard, and I walk out the door after a rain and a bit of sunshine, and suddenly there are all these weeds growing in those places where I just cleared them away. And for a moment I think, oh, those pesky weeds. But then I remember I have a super cape, so I get it out and I shake it and I put it around me. And then I see that, isn't it fascinating that all I have out there is rock, and yet something insists on growing. And I have this newfound transformation of my life that changes my day. And what happens if I change my day in a positive way in the morning? I am going to head out for my life, and I'm going to have a completely different experience than if I watched the news and I read the email that wasn't so pleasant, and I'm worried about somebody something, and I carry that stuff in the world. My energetic vibration is not going to be as godlike in nature as compared to when I am spiritually grounded. That was a beautiful song, Standing on Holy Ground. Did you notice she sung that barefooted? Mm-hmm. That's the way to do that. So, poet William Ernest Henley, who wrote a gorgeous, if you're not familiar with this poem, you should totally Google it because it really is so beautiful. The poem is Invictus. But here's the line from that poem that you will recognize. I am the master of my fate and the captain of my soul. Never forget that, because that's where all of our self-empowerment lies, that we have that choice and we realize that as we redirect our thoughts that it's not our power, it's a power that's even greater than anything we could do on our own. And it's about aligning to that power energetically. So we are seeing that there's this scientific proof that this is how all this stuff works, and that what we think shapes our life and influences us. And as I go out in the world, whatever state of mind I'm in, whatever God-like vibration I'm energetically moving at, that all is all contagious. That impacts every conversation I have, every other encounter I have with all of life. So there's a physical response in our body. Whether you feel good or you don't feel good, you're going to have a physical response to that, but we are not a victim to that, because the whole point of the conversation this morning is to remind us we are in choice about all of that. So to say that we are emotional in origin is not to say that that is a bad thing or that it's harmful. Sometimes people come from Eastern thought where there's a strong emphasis on being detached or non-attachment. So what I'm saying is we're talking about emotions in a very different way, and it is not considered spiritual advancement to just be emotionless. In fact, the desires of our heart, as we so often say here, will not only prove to you that you're still alive and give you some desire to move through each day, but though they will lead you also to God's highest good for your own life. Amen. That's right. That's right. So what happens is that we just forget sometimes that we are the captain of our own ship, or however he worded it, the captain of my soul. I'm the master of my fate. And so something happens and we think, oh, that person was so awful to me. That phone call was so disturbing. And we believe that's true. But what we've done is we've just not chosen to have a different response. We just reacted, and there are a lot of reasons why that happens, and it's not that it's wrong or bad. Again, remember, this is not a reprimand. And yet, it takes us back to realizing you got to make a choice. If I have a taste for fresh fruit, I am going to go to the grocery store, and I'm going to go down the produce aisle, and I'm going to decide whether I want to buy apples or peaches, and I'm going to hopefully realize that I don't have to just eat bananas all the time, because that would be boring, that life is full of these amazing choices. And so we have choices as well in every other part of our life. When you leave here today, you will have to decide whether you are going to go east or west on Peoria Avenue. Right? So we have choices all the time. And I had an opportunity to have a choice this week. I came to work and sat down in my office. I closed the door and I returned a phone call that had come in. And I knew the phone call was going to be a little dicey, because it was one of those business phone calls where there's a discrepancy where you and the person on the other end of the phone don't agree as to what's been going on, and now you have to stick up for your rights, right? You got to straighten that stuff out, or, you know, it just goes from bad to worse. So I returned the phone call. And I did have an anticipation that I shouldn't be doing this at work, because it's probably going to cause me to spin a little bit, because I know I've already predicted how it's going to go. And you know what? That's exactly how the phone call went. So I even told the lady on the phone, let me tell you what's going to happen here. You're going to say this, and I'm going to say that. Then you're going to go talk to your supervisor, and you're going to leave me on hold for 10 minutes, and then you're going to come back, and that's exactly what happened. Exactly what happened. So I got off the phone, and I could feel my heart racing. I could feel I had some pissed offness stirred up, you know. And I went, okay, you got stuff to do today. And I, you know what, I hate it when that thought, when you have those conversations and you keep thinking about what you should have said. You know what I should have said? I should have told her, blah, blah, blah. I do not want that to run my day. And I knew the possibility was there. So you know what I did? Reverend Cheryl, we were doing the conversation circle out there. I hope you didn't hear me yelling through the wall. I didn't yell. I actually stayed very calm on the phone, which might have been part of the problem. So I came in here, and it was completely dark. And I sat down, probably right where Cheryl's sitting right now, and I sat there and I closed my eyes and I just meditated for what felt like quite a long time. It was probably only a few minutes. And at a certain point, I got this very strong message. You have a lot. I could feel the energy. When I sat still, I could feel that energy. And I don't want that energy in there. And so the divine message, the way God speaks to me, was that I knew I needed to walk it off. So I then went in this room, and nobody was there, and I walked the perimeter of Papke Hall 12 or 15 times. I just walked, and I treated while I was doing that. I prayed while I was doing that, and then I felt much calmer. I walked into my office, and I did one final thing. I'm so blessed to have an admin assistant who is also a practitioner. And I called the practitioner into my office and said, I just need you to ground me. And that'll be the final thing I need. And we did that in probably 90 seconds. And then I went through my day and I had a productive, happy day. I left it. You know, I left it. I gave it to God and it was gone. So there are things we can do. And the key is to notice I was conscious. I was aware of it. I'd like to be so conscious that never happens to me, but judging by my love of passion, it's not likely I'm going to let all of that go any day soon. But meanwhile, I know how to move through that stuff and not set up a tent and camp there. So I wanted to talk to you for a minute about the placebo studies. I find that all the work they're doing with placebos, they're even saying nocebos, and I don't think they ever intended they would get so much information in the experiments they've done with placebos. So a placebo in the medical world is where you go to the doctor for something and they give you, instead of medicine, you think you're getting medicine, they give you a sugar pill or they give you an injection with just saline water, and then voila, you get, and then they tell you you're going to be well, and then you get well. Or they tell you the opposite and you have the opposite effect. So it's typically done in controlled studies where there's a group of people and they split the group in half, and half the people get the real medication and the other half do not get medication. They get the placebo, but nobody knows which group they're in. And it's so interesting that even when they know it might be the placebo, in a big majority of cases, they develop symptoms. So for instance, generally speaking, what we know is placebos have miraculously, I'm talking about sugar pills or saline injections, nothing, has lowered blood pressure, healed ulcers, dropped cholesterol levels, decreased colon irritations, reduced pain, and a list so long that it took a whole paragraph in a book, and that was just some of the things that they've seen successful treatment through placebos. So we begin to see that, wow, the mind has an important role here in what's going on. They also notice that when they give people placebos, they suggest that some of the side effects might be nausea or headaches, that more than 80% of the people that didn't get anything develop headaches and nausea and believe it's because they had the real medication. So the power of suggestion is amazing. But here's the one that really made me stop and take a breath. I had not read this before. One study gave patients in a control group, these people were there for cancer treatment, and they were told that there's a new type of chemotherapy available. And half the study group will get the real drug and the other half will not, and they don't know which side they are, but they know they're part of this experiment, and of course they want the benefit of they're hoping they'll have the benefit of the real drug. And so one study, this particular study, gave patients in the control group for this new chemotherapy drug, half of them got nothing but saline, and they were told that it could be the chemotherapy, and of those people who did not receive chemotherapy, 30% of them experienced all the side effects of chemotherapy, including losing their hair. 79% of medical students develop symptoms of whatever disease they're studying. Okay, so they don't get the disease, but 79% of medical students will develop some of the symptoms of what they're studying. Do you see why we should not be Googling and playing on the internet and self-diagnosing? You know, I mean, we've always known there's risk in that, but this is serious information. Now, my statistics I'm using today came from a book by Lisa Rankin. It's a book called Mind Over Medicine that our practitioner students are required to read. And as I was talking about the books for the class last week, I began to thumb through the book and realized how pertinent this was to the message that I'm trying to deliver this morning. There is no question that there is a mind-body connection and that what we think and how we feel creates very specific physiological changes in our body. Let's talk about epigenetics for a minute. You know what that is? That's the study of epigenetics comes out of all the DNA research. And so what that is, it's where they look at the diseases that we are genetically predisposed to. So it's why, to this day, and probably for the next 100 years, when you go to a doctor for the first time, you fill out the medical health thing, you have to give your family history. You have to give all your family history of what could go wrong, of who died of what. Now, here's some real interesting information. Biologists who study this stuff are changing their mind about inherited disease. Now, for some of you, this will not be new. I suspect the book club has read, our book group has probably read some of this information because we always have such good, you know, the Bruce Lipton and the Greg Braden and, you know, where you would hear stuff like this. Deepak Chopra has been saying it for many years. The epigeneticists... The people that study this stuff are telling us that inherited disease is not as likely to get us as we thought, that there's a whole science around it. Now, I want to read it because I couldn't figure out how to say it without stumbling over it. The regulatory proteins that run the genes of your body, we have about 25,000 genes, and by the way, they used to think there were about 120,000, but now they're saying, as they're looking at DNA, there are about 25,000 genes that are regulated by these proteins in our body. It's just the way it works. And they make up our personal genetic code, all those genes. The proteins that determine biology in your life, however, are influenced by at least 30,000 other environmental factors. 30,000 other environmental factors. Well, now we understand some of that, right? We talk about eating well. We look at good nutrition. We talk about the benefits of exercise. We talk about the value of sleeping the right amount of hours, taking vitamins, having a good hormone level, being concerned about the toxins in our environment, avoiding things like saccharin, paying attention if you're gluten intolerant to what you eat. Those are eight things. Those are eight different environmental things. None of them alone is out to get you. But here's the part that blew my mind. I was telling Hugh about this last night, and I said, honey, if that's eight, I counted, those are eight things. That leaves 29,992 other things we haven't even talked about this morning, right? That contribute to the well-being of your genes and your health and all of that. And so, not to mention accidents and things like that. So if I look at stress, well, we could look at stress in dozens, hundreds probably of ways that stress has a difficult impact on our immune system. We could look at of attitude. We haven't even talked about our attitude, our thoughts, the stories we tell ourselves, what we believe. All of that now is leaning into the spiritual realm. So the vast majority... This blows my mind, so really listen to this. Put on your little cape so you can hear well. Put your invisible cape on. The vast majority of physical ailments that we experience, we have some say over it. We're not a victim to any of that. And we are certainly not a victim to our genes. So, you know, let's quit blaming our relatives or that person that sneezed in the grocery store, and you just know now you're going to get whatever they have, even if it's just an allergy. You know, the way that we're always looking outside of us as to what bad things are hovering around waiting to attack our vulnerability. The current research in epigenetics released in 2013 says that only 5% of cancer can be attributed to our genes. Only 5%. That same study says that only 5% of cardiac problems can be attributed to heredity. We cannot blame our genes. We have to look at about 30,000 other factors that we have control of mostly in our own environment. Not everything, but a great deal of our choices will put us in a whole different category in terms of our health. So here's the big hit. Changing your thoughts changes the way your brain communicates with your body, thereby altering your biochemistry. So if a placebo can cause us to believe we've just had a radical chemical put into our body, so much so that our hair can fall out, wow, how powerful are our brains, our minds, the way we think, the things we think about, and we are at choice as to how we motivate our minds and what we feed our minds. So what we have called psychosomatic medicine is now being called neuroscience. Talk to Reverend Clyde. He just came back recently from a conference where Mark, one of those doctors that writes in the Science of Mind magazine every month, who's a neuroscientist, Mark Waldem or Wahlberg, is it? Oh, I love reading what they contribute each week, each month. And he has some new information that says we don't even have to meditate for a long time. Even a couple of minutes can impact us in a greatly positive way. So all of these researchers are coming up with a conclusion that rather than heredity, we should be focusing on personality traits, beliefs, the way the individual mind processes things and what we think about it, because the belief is impacting the physical body. Now, stress is not good for us, but life will never be stress-free. We just, as in the human condition, we just will experience all kinds of stress, and we get to choose how we respond to the stress that comes to us. But here's what I want to tell you, and again, this is pure principle. It's science, but I'm telling you, this fits so beautifully with what we teach. Stress can be countered by our positive choices because our body has a built-in counterbalance to stress. Built-in. We got something in our physiology already. Every single one of us has this capacity to counterbalance the stress that we bump into. Harvard cardiologist Herbert Benson described it this way. This is good. When the conscious forebrain thinks positive thoughts and feels things like love, connection, pleasure, and hope, then the hypothalamus of our brain stops triggering the stress response in our body. The minute you turn your thought from this difficult thing, this stressful thing, and you begin to focus on anything positive, any of those, the godlike nature, love, or peace, or calm, or beauty, anything that takes you away from that, the instant you do that, the hypothalamus stops triggering all the stress response stuff. So what that means is even a little bit of optimism, a moment of being hopeful for the state of the world, a way that we treat ourselves to creatively express, or a walk in nature, even being, and maybe especially I should say, being spiritually fed, those things change the physiology of our body itself, even a moment of it. So simplified, it's like this. When we're under stress, the body's immune system flips off. When we are nurtured, I'm talking of self-nurturing by choice, the immune system immediately flips back on. And then the body can function in that normal process of self-repair or preventing illnesses. So Lisa Rankin, the woman doctor I was talking about earlier, she that wrote the book we use in class, she was saying that she, through her whole experience in medical school, she never once was shown an article by Deepak Chopra or recommended to read Bernie Siegel or Bruce Lipton or any of the people that are doing all this research. And she, as a practicing doctor, began to make her own assumptions about all of this stuff and then started to research it and found out that there's this plenitude of research that proves it's scientific, that it's already available. She said this, "Your thoughts lead to self-healing. The mind has healed the body, and it's not some new age metaphysical thing. It is physiology. We are talking science." Now, we've known this. We didn't need all this validation because we just live this stuff. We live this life, and we see that our life is transformed every time we renew our mind. So we know that positive belief, we know that the nurturing self-care brings the body into a better state of physiology. We understand that because we're healthier. Naturally, we're happier. And when we are, so is everybody else in our life. You know, I always say around here, when the queen sings, the kingdom smiles. You know, mom's in a bad mood, then everybody sort of suffers. We all know these things to be true. We can create different experiences as we choose to, just by changing our mind. How we think, how we feel, and how we emote, we are always playing a part in all of it. We are not a victim to any temper tantrum. You have some room to grow. And finally, I just wanted to give you a couple of statistics from what they know about people who are spiritually committed. So here's one really, really good one. No disclaimer here. It's okay to feel guilty after you hear it. The people who attend religious services regularly, that's more than twice a month. I'll throw that little plug out. People who attend religious services regularly live an average of 7.5 years longer than other people. Okay, hang on to this one. If you are African American, that number doubles to 14 years. It's a fact. I don't make this stuff up. So, you know, I mean, there are a lot of ways we can see the reasoning in that. We can understand that. People who are part of a spiritual community, they've done this research. You know, people who are part of a spiritual community tend to have lower blood pressure than those who don't. They tend to have less depression, and they, generally speaking, have stronger immune systems. So keep coming back, you know, be here, hang out. Let's do this thing. Don't let anybody tell you that what you have is incurable. Don't ever let anybody convince you that whatever you're moving through is incurable or impossible. Prove them wrong instead. Use this stuff. Have people pray with you. Read stuff that will help anchor this as your reality so you can be thinking about these things instead of the opposite, instead of the absence of what seems to be missing. Look at the fullness of the godlike nature of us. We originate from God. We are created in the image of that God stuff, and therefore, the infinite intelligence of all the universe is in us. Bernie Siegel said, "Within each is a spark. You can call it a divine spark if you will, but it is there and it can light the way to health. There are no incurable diseases, only incurable people." So let us remember that. Think about that. We are energy in motion. How do you want to move through the world? Choose the direction of your well-being and notice that there are 30,000 things we could look at to improve our environment. And then use this stuff. It's God-given. All right, take a breath. Take a big, beautiful, holy breath right now. And we will anchor these words in prayer. And as you hear that music, allow it to help you settle into some profound truth that has been spoken today. And let us feel and experience those God-like emotions that are original in us. Just feel the love of God inside of you. Sense that abiding peace. Recognize the harmony that always exists and the unity, the connection. Let us be nurtured by this awareness right now. Feel the love of God within you. It is that presence of God. It is a power that is everywhere present. It is that intelligence in every cell of our being. And it is everywhere present in all of life. And so we align to this truth. We find our place in that movement. We accept and acknowledge and feel that energy as a vibration, a divine vibration that guides us, that carries us through every activity, that supports our intention to have wholesome thoughts that nurture ourselves and each other. I feel the love of God, and I know that it is the activity of life that is activated by the words of this prayer. And so wherever there seems to be an absence of any sort, something missing that we long for, we simply know that we're looking at polarities, that the fullness of peace is already ours, that perfect health is already here within us, that joy and love and the peace and the beauty and the power, all of it is already ours. And as we recognize this magnificent truth, we feel that shift within us. We are renewing our minds and we are transformed and we begin to transform the world because we insist on recognizing life at its fullest. And so, in those cases where there has been an experience of illness, a diagnosis, a loss, a sense of limitation in any way, we face that idea and we meet it with truth and we know that everything we need to move beyond that is already ours. It is the Father's good pleasure to give us all the gifts of the kingdom. And so we open ourselves to receive right now, here in this sanctuary, right now in our very own individual lives, we open ourselves to receive the healing that we came for, to be restored to our wholeness, to know, to absolutely know the goodness of God that is our life, and that it ripples out, blessing all of our loved ones, that our energetic vibration is a healing presence in and of itself. I say thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you, Infinite Spirit. For I rejoice in having a teaching that realigns us regularly to a larger truth, to the possibility and potential of goodness in every way in our personal lives. I give thanks for this, and I release the words of this prayer into the divine law that always says yes. And together we say, and so it is. Amen.